Hi, everyone, and welcome to Fireside Chat number 272. Wow, look at this. You're getting both. This is very rare, and I hope you didn't miss it. Otto and Snoopy in the picture. So, I'm Dennis Prager. This is a chance. I'm sorry for the dog commotion, but there's really nothing we can do. This is a chance for me to talk to you quite directly. There's no script. There's no teleprompter. It's all spontaneous. Something on my mind that I want to share, and then I take your questions wherever you are, literally around the world, watching the Fireside Chat. So before I offer you a thought on the subject that I'm planning to talk about, a little introduction might be helpful. I talk about religion fairly frequently. This is not, so to speak, a religious show, and it's certainly not specifically one religion. It's not Catholic, it's not evangelical, it's not Protestant, it's not quote-unquote Christian, it's not Mormon. I'm a Jew and a committed Jew, but it's not specifically Jewish either. And by the way, I saw the video question just right before coming on here with you, and it will actually be about that. But my intention in raising this introductory comment is to say that unlike almost all other general podcasts, radio shows, broadcasts, I advocate religion, God, Bible, more than just about any other non-religious programming, because it is the fundamental issue in the world. I knew in my 20s, and I know I knew it because I wrote it in my first book, which was when I was 24 years old, that the most important question is there a God? Specifically, the God of the Bible, the Ten Commandments, etc. I understood what most professors don't understand. I knew this at 24, which is no compliment to me. In the past, most people knew it at the age of 24. Most people knew it, I think, at the age of 15, that it's the most important question in the world, is there a God? Because if there's no God, then there's really nothing. There's just this moment, this fragmentary moment of time in which we come into the universe, then we're gone for eternity. It's oblivion, which is a very sobering thought when you think about it. And not only that, there's no ultimate meaning to life. It's a coincidence that I'm here. It's a coincidence that you're here. It's pure coincidence that anything is here. There's no purpose to it all. Creation has no creator. It has no maker. It has no designer. What we think of as good and evil is purely opinion. There is no objective good and evil. It's just, I think murder is wrong. You think murder is right. Who's to decide, since there's nothing above us from which the moral code comes from? So I understood that, and that's why I have rarely talked about, when I'm asked or debated, I talk about it, God's existence. I talk about God's necessity. Because even if you believe that there is a God, but you don't understand why it's so important, it's not really a significant or meaningful belief. So that's why I spend the time. And if you are irreligious or even anti-religious, this is particularly dedicated to you, because if you think rationally, you have to conclude that this is the biggest issue. It is, simple as that. So let me give you a different way of approaching the issue. Whenever I speak about the question of God and morality, for example, I will say to somebody, so to whom are you morally accountable, right? I mean, I want you to think about that question for a moment. To whom or to what are you morally accountable for your behavior? And the answer I get is, I'm not accountable. I don't believe in a God to whom I'm accountable. I'm accountable to my conscience. That is the most common answer that I receive. So I want to talk to you today about conscience. What does that mean to be accountable to your conscience? And what is the conscience? Well, it turns out if you're accountable to your conscience, it's really essentially the exact same thing as saying you're accountable to your own feelings. Let's talk about the conscience. How effective is the conscience? How morally productive is it? If you think about it for not too long, it turns out to be pretty weak. Here's a proof. People who do evil or support evil sleep well at night. And they are accountable to their conscience. And the people who do good are accountable to their conscience. So if the conscience could lead you to do bad and to do good, of what use is the conscience? Think about it. Did slave owners have a conscience? Yeah. And some of them, by the way, including the founders of the United States, their conscience did bother them. That is true. But for the most part, in all of history, every society people had slaves. Their conscience didn't bother them. How about human sacrifice? Virtually every society we know of in history had, or in ancient history, had child sacrifice, virgin sacrifice, human sacrifice, sacrifice of enemies. This is a busy world here with the dogs, I have to admit it. Okay. Everybody had human sacrifice. Was their conscience okay? The Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament, if you will, introduced the idea that human sacrifice is evil. So therefore, people who obeyed that, their conscience would bother them if there was human sacrifice. But only because they were taught by something higher than their conscience that human sacrifice was wrong. Nazis slept well at night. Communists slept well at night. Communists killed 100 million, way more, by the way, than the Nazis. And I only mention it because the ignorance of evil that pervades our higher education institutions is almost total. So the good guys had a conscience and the bad guys had a conscience. This is true throughout history. So of what use, when you think about it, is the conscience unless you have a morally developed conscience? Yes, but then what gave you the moral development? What code? And ultimately, in the West, there was a code that emanated from what we call Judeo-Christian values. Not only that, let's say you don't sleep well at night after you do evil. Obviously, your conscience wasn't particularly effective then either. So either your conscience is okay with your doing evil or it's not okay, but it didn't stop you. So it sounds odd to make the case that the conscience, which is revered in the West, is almost useless. It's useful in good people with a good code of ethics. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean that every religious person will act good. A lot of people who believe in God have acted bad. Of course, there are people who believe in God who've done evil. It's very hard to make good people. The best method we have is a combination of God and reason. God alone, you get fanaticism often. Reason alone, you get nothing. The places that drop God most are our universities and then the most morally absurd institutions in the Western world. That's where Men Give Birth came from. That's where massive support for the idea of communism over capitalism, which is essentially evil over freedom, developed. All the people who gave Stalin, the greatest mass murderer in history outside of Mao, the atom bomb, came from the intellectual circles of the college-educated. They think at colleges that you can develop great ideas without God. They're proof that you can't. Okay? There is no secular institution that produces wisdom. So God needs reason, and reason needs God. And even then, we're not guaranteed. We need a third thing, by the way. a deep, unapologetic, unafraid commitment to truth. That's a biggie. Truth, reason, and God. And I'm speaking about specifically the God of the Bible, the Western Bible. Okay, I can't speak for other gods. I'm not knocking them. I'm just talking about that one. God, reason, truth. You have a chance for a good world. It isn't easy to produce one. Okay, that's the argument here. If next time you hear, I am accountable to my conscience, don't laugh out loud, but you're allowed to laugh inside. The person is fooling himself or herself because it only means I'm accountable to me and my feelings. That's all it means. Okie doke, over to your questions.
Hi, Dennis. I'm Adam. I'm turning 27 this week, and I live in Los Angeles, California. I'm a Christian, and I believe faith in Jesus Christ is the one true way to have eternal life. You've said that everyone should be going to church, whether that be Catholic Church, Protestant Church, or Jewish synagogue, everyone should be going to church. But you are Jewish. So my question is, if you believe that Judaism is the truth, then why don't you call everyone to convert to Judaism specifically?
Well, that question has been asked to me by Christians calling my show all of my career. I'm not sure we're going to get to any more questions. This is such an important question. And for many of you who are Christian, it will be truly eye-opening. I'm trying to choose the proper words here because it's a very sensitive subject. But the answer to your question is Judaism does not hold that you can only be saved by being Jewish. There is no such doctrine. It never existed. And it's not Old Testament based, which is, of course, the Jewish Bible and is obviously adopted by Christians, as I often tell my Christian friends. Jesus never read the New Testament. He only read the Old Testament. So it's the only testament existent in the time that he lived. And there is not a hint that you have to be a Jew to be saved. There are some fundamental religious differences between Judaism and Christianity. They don't bother me because I don't judge groups or individuals by their theology or beliefs. I only judge them by their behavior. And the behavior of certainly America's Christians, European Christians is more of a mixed bag, but of America's Christians has by and large been incredible on the face of the earth. These are the people who made the freest country in history, and the overthrowing of American Christianity done at our universities and by what we call the left will lead to the end of the United States and liberty as we know them. So I ache for Christianity to succeed in America, though I am not obviously a believing Christian. Again, this is really fundamental. Judaism does not judge people by their faith, but only by their behavior. A bad Jew goes to hell and a good Christian goes to heaven. That is the Jewish view. And for Jews watching who think Judaism doesn't believe in heaven and hell, I commend to you the most important Jewish thinker who ever lived, Rambam or Maimonides. One of the 13 principles of the Jewish faith is that there is reward and punishment after this life. He doesn't use the words heaven and hell, but what is the difference between reward in heaven or punishment in hell? There is no difference. So, of course, Judaism has always affirmed ultimate justice. By the way, if God doesn't punish the evil and reward the good, count me as an atheist, because then God is morally irrelevant. In fact, much of my faith is dependent upon the belief that God judges people. Thank God God judges people. In fact, I have suggested to PragerU on many occasions that we put up a few billboards around the United States and they would say something like this: just a reminder, God judges you. I think that would be infinitely more effective than God loves you in producing a good world. I think we have gone way, way overboard on the love issue, but that's worthy of another fireside chat. So to answer your question, Judaism does not seek that everyone be a Jew. Christianity would like everyone to be Christian. I understand that. But that is not a Jewish belief. That is why it seems odd to you that I'm so advocative of people going back to church. I am, because it makes a better country and a better world. That's the reason. And because we share the same Torah. In fact, that same Rambam, Maimonides, who was persecuted by Christians and persecuted by Muslims, nevertheless acknowledged at the end of his great work, the Yad HaChazakah, the strong arm, translating it in English, his compendium of Jewish law, wrote, "It's Christians who brought the Torah to the world." And that's a fact. Interestingly, I will be speaking in the next week in Miami at a Jewish school, at a big Orthodox Jewish school, and they asked me, "What would you like to talk about?" And I said, "I would like to talk about, do the Jews have a mission to the world?" Because in traditional Jewish life, which I had Orthodox Jewish upbringing, and I went to a yeshiva, half-day religious studies, half-day secular studies, till I was 19 years of age. And we weren't really taught about a mission to the world, which is a mistake. Christians have a clear mission, bring the world to Christ. Muslims have a clear mission, bring the world to Allah and the Quran and Muhammad's message. What is Jews' mission to the world? Well, there is a Jewish mission to the world. Bring the world to the God of Sinai. And bring the world, in my opinion, to the Ten Commandments. Traditionally, they said the seven laws of the children of Noah, but nobody outside of traditional Judaism ever heard of it, so I use the Ten Commandments. So that is my mission as a Jew, is not to get you to be Jewish, though we welcome converts, but it's not to get you to be Jewish. It's to get you to take God and the Ten Commandments seriously. As I have said, if you really want to defund the police, just have everybody live by the Ten Commandments. Then you could defund the police. Then nation shall not lift sword against nation. Isaiah's view of the messianic age, when nation shall not lift sword against nation. If every nation just lived by the Ten Commandments, it's amazing, isn't it? We can't even get past number 5 today in America. Honor your father and mother. That's a major challenge to a lot of people. Oh, my parents voted Republican. I won't talk to them. That's a first. So I hope this answers your question, which is a very fair one. It would seem odd to many Christians that I, a religious Jew, would not be out there saying, I want you all to come to my faith. But that is not the Jewish call. The Jewish call is that people come to the God that we believe in, but not to the religion that we adhere to necessarily. Okay? Oh, yeah. I'm looking at you, and it's over here. Looking at you. Okay. All right, here we go. Another God question. Jordan, 26, Colorado. Hello, Dennis, Megan, 1 and 2. Nathan, Otto, and Snoopy. I absolutely love what you and Prager you do, and I pray for your continued success. Thank you. I also want to thank you for your rational Bible. Steve, that's a good example. I'm explaining the first 5 books of the Bible, the most important books of the Bible, called the Torah, in the rational Bible. And if what I say at the fireside chats is important to you, that's what I would hope you would read. That's very significant. You can get it through PragerU, by the way, a signed copy, yeah. Or just order it through Amazon. My wish is that every person read it. My wish, too. And not for money. Nobody writes Bible commentaries to get rich. I think we can all acknowledge that. In any case, I don't want to waste any more of your time. You're not wasting my time, so I will ask my question. In your Bible commentary, you say that God must be able to feel pain or sadness because we humans can feel those things, and after all, why would or how could a god create a creature that had abilities that he himself did not possess? I agree with this, by the way. My question is, since humans are capable of great evil and we are made in his image, is he capable of evil? Well, that's an interesting question. I'm not sure I ever thought of it. So I will give you an answer that will not emotionally satisfy you. I don't know if it will even intellectually, but it satisfies me. The only time I speculate on these questions is when people ask me them. I spend almost no time thinking about what God is like. I adopted long ago a great Hebrew phrase from the Middle Ages. In Hebrew, it's only three words. In English, it's translated it's more because Hebrew can combine words into one. Lu yedativ hayitiv. If I knew him, I'd be him. That's my view of God. I can't know him. It's like asking Otto to know me. Okay? It's impossible. It's impossible for us to know God. So I can't answer the question because the distance, the gap between the human and the divine is infinite. So what do I ask? All I ask is, what does God want from me? I don't think about who God is, because I end up at a dead end. I don't know. It's enough for me to know that there is a God who knows me, has given me a way to live through the Bible, specifically the Torah, even more specifically the Ten Commandments. And that has been a tremendous comfort to me. So I don't speculate on the nature of God. Patrick, 36, Evergreen Park, Illinois. Hi, Dennis, Otto, Snoopy, and all the seemingly amazing people. They're not seemingly amazing. Who make the Fireside Chat possible. I've been reading a lot of Dietrich Bonhoeffer lately and feel inspired to wake up the church in America. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, for those of you who don't know, but you should, it's important to know great good people, not just great bad people. Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a German Protestant pastor who resisted the Nazis and was murdered by them, executed by them for his anti-Nazi stances. The tragedy of the German church is a real tragedy. And I'll continue with his question because it's one that I worry about. Furthermore, after reading Eric Metaxas's letter to the American church, I feel, by the way, Metaxas wrote a great biography of Bonhoeffer. I feel we are now at a pivotal moment in history. I do not wish to see the American church turn into the German church of the 1930s. I believe it is time for the church to weigh in on societal matters that many claim only belong in the arena of politics. Any suggestions on how to bring my concerns to local priests and pastors? Also, do you feel the need for revival in America's Jewish community? Thanks for all you do. May God continue to bless you in your endeavors. Thank you. Well, that is why I was so troubled by the sheep-like behavior of the synagogues and churches when given orders to shut down for nearly 2 years during COVID. Those were irrational orders, and they should have been resisted by rabbis, priests, and ministers, just as teachers should have resisted calls for shutting down schools. But they didn't. In fact, teachers called for shutting down schools. Teachers were considerably worse than even the clergy. It is a very bad thing that churches, synagogues, temples, they all, not all, most obeyed irrational secular authority. That's a very sad thing, because if I can't look to religious institutions for a healthy approach to life, if they tell me to be an obedient, non-questioning servant of the state. What do I need religion for? Some people did resist it among Orthodox Jews, among evangelical Protestants. And I don't know within the Catholic Church. I'm sure some did. And to my great sadness, LDS, Latter-day Saints, Mormons, they went along completely with the secular authorities. I say great disappointment because I have great respect, still do, and affection for the Mormons. But I think that I don't engage in unbridled optimism, but I think if the same thing were to happen again, I think a lot of people in the religious community will have said, "You can fool us once, but not twice." I think so. I hope we don't have to find out, but I have that sense. So your worry is my worry. But you know what? If you know history, you know that troubled times are normal times. There's a Chinese curse, and ironically, it's a Jewish curse too. May you live in interesting times. There's a curses, not blessings. I would love to live in a boring time, and because I make my own life interesting. When life outside of me is interesting, it's almost always a bad sign. We're living in very interesting times today. Too bad. Well, anyway, some thoughts to reflect on. I hope you share these fireside chats with friends and relatives. They're very real. They're about real life, and they deal with real issues. I'll see you next week.